Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM. ESPN.
On a Tuesday, July 2nd, 2024 is the date. Welcome in. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman, Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside executive producer of the day, Connor. We have a sick day. We have a couple of sick days probably on the way here. So we have Brad Carson in.
Hey, well,
fearless
Jay,
leader Brad Carson. On X at Brad Carson.
What's happening,
what's
Gabe
up,
Kuhn,
brother?
In the Gabe Kuhn Show? The relative to the guy who invented the Easy Bake Oven is the tallest lineman on the radio. How are you?
You just gave me all my...
all your accolades.
Yes, everything out there.
Also, a man who I just learned is blocked currently by our X account. I'll have to unblock.
Why? Why?
I have no idea.
In the world would I be blocked?
Not you. One of our guests. I've just unblocked him.
Oh, God.
That's funny.
Oh, Lord. No way. That's,
listen,
that's sad
listen,
stuff.
My reputation is in certain places in bars. It's not great either, so I'll unblock him.
Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord.
Well, I'm just keeping it real here, bro.
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure. We got to unblock my man, Lawrence.
You're unblocked, Lawrence. Can't wait to have you on. I blocked him, too. It must have been about me. Yeah, I'm going to unblock you, bro.
Well,
maybe you can reboot.
We have 2 hours to talk. Lawrence will be part of it.
Behave,
2 hours to talk,
Lawrence.
On the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours. Really, you think he just, like, went after
who
you?
Who knows? No, it's Twitter. It's a cesspool, bro. I'm sure he's being, you know, we all take things seriously on X.
Yeah.
Unblocked.
Are you a blocker?
A serial blocker. I enjoy it. I do it for sport.
Dikembe Mutombo
style. It's one of my favorite things to do. People take it way too seriously, Gabe, so blocking them is fun.
No, I
go,
hear you.
F you. Block.
I hear you. No.
Sorry, Lawrence. I'm not F-ing you. I just, I've unblocked you.
Yes.
Look forward to the soccer talk.
Yes.
Continue.
No. We're going to be off and rolling. We're going to have some Caleb Mills talk.
His
waiver was denied for medical hardship.
That's what lost the season for us right there, dog.
Yeah, it would have been nice to have him back, but I'll talk about it in a second. This one was open and shut case.
That didn't take long. NCAA couldn't wait to block ass.
We didn't have to wait very long, and there was obvious reasons we didn't have to wait very long. Jason Munns has been on it the entire time, and I'll tell you what he said about it before this waiver got denied, but it was pretty clear the entire time this is where it was headed. We'll also have Grizzly Summer League coming up on Monday in Salt Lake City. How about this?
I'm looking forward to the Summer League in Utah and Vegas.
I want to get my first look at Zach Edey. I think it's that simple.
I don't think we're going to get many looks. I think looks.
I want to get my first look.
That's how many looks do we need?
I want to get a look. It's
just
that
look
simple. Then also, we're going to talk some soccer, believe it or not, because Copa America is going on like right now. And I'll tell you what.
Copacabana?
United States men's national team. They were cooked really quickly.
Yes,
lost to Uruguay last night,
yes.
And they're up out of there.
Yeah.
And this is supposed to be what has been termed by a lot of soccer analysts that cover these things.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be termed the golden generation for U.S. men's soccer.
Come on.
And it is completely going awry.
Yeah.
So we'll talk with Lawrence Dockery around 4:30. He's from Bluff City Media, covers 901 FC and soccer in the city, the whole thing, soccer nationally. He's not a big fan of Greg Berhalter. I think he had a little run-in with him last week.
Oh, no.
We'll have to talk to him. And, of course, Greg Berhalter is the head coach of the U.S. men's national team. But I want to ask him about that. That was kind of fun when he texted me the little run-in he had.
Personally?
US men's
like in
national
person?
Team coach. Yeah, it's an oppressor.
I look forward to it.
That's phenomenal. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins will join the show. He is from the Jeff Calkins Show and from the Daily Memphian. He's a columnist there. Hop into the Blitz early because we don't have the third hour. It'll be around 5:30.
I can only work 2 hours. It's a new part of my contract.
And we have Bronny James talk. Every time you're in here, we have Bronny James talk. Shams reported something that I should have expected to see, but I didn't expect to see. But it looks like he'll sign a multi-year guaranteed rookie contract with the Los Angeles
That's
Lakers.
Ridiculous.
Shouldn't be surprised.
That is so ridiculous.
Because he got drafted. They're putting him in there. They're trying to make things happen with him, especially with LeBron being on the Lakers. But a multi-year contract guaranteed is probably headed his way. And then we'll have to talk about Cam Payne, Memphis legend and 76ers guard, Cam Payne. Have you seen that stuff?
Am I too Memphis-centric that I didn't retweet or put much of that on the station account? I've tried
to. No, you don't need
it.
It's fine.
I didn't put much on it.
It really isn't that big a deal to me. For those that don't know, he got in trouble with the law.
Yeah.
And I don't want to spoil it right now, but his trouble with the law is really not that.
Right. It's not as deep as some
it's
dudes.
It's not very deep.
Right.
He had no DUI, right. nothing. He did no domestic
used
violence.
An alias.
There was a little bit of a disturbance, but he did use an alias, and the alias is what got him in trouble. And it kind of gives. I can just imagine this situation going down. When we get to it, I'll sort of get through it. But this situation going down and him using the alias in front of the cops, I'd imagine that was probably a funny scene. A relatively funny scene.
Right.
Not happy they took him in and put him in cuffs and arrested him, but I'd imagine it was kind of funny.
Yes.
Being outside that house at 2:44 in the morning. But
sounded like a hell of a party.
Yeah, we'll hop into that, and then we'll get to small talk to wrap up the show, and we'll rewind then as well. Now, for those that have been asking me about Christian Fowler and him being on the show, well, we've had two-hour shows. He's going to join tomorrow at 4:30.
Oh, that'll be
fun. We've had to move around the schedule a little bit, and we've had some off days. I know I've had some off days. So Christian Fowler will be on tomorrow at 4:30. That's what we're going to do with him. And then, going into the future, he will be at 6 o'clock every day, like he normally, or not every
That's
day,
good.
But every Tuesday,
yep.
like he normally has been. Now, let's start with Caleb Mills. Caleb Mills' waiver is completely denied. Now, if you've been following Jason Munns, who's the beat reporter for Tiger Basketball, for the Commercial Appeal, he was very clear about this the entire time. There's some people that subscribe to his Tiger Basketball Insider text group, and they follow along with some of the intel he's getting. This is what he had to say. What are the chances of Caleb Mills returning? That was a question from somebody in his Insider text group. And he said as close to zero as can be without actually being zero. So this was something we didn't really ever think was going to go through. Contrary to what we had last year with DeAndre Williams, there was this up and down zigzag. We got all these lawyers involved. You started to think that maybe he'd make his way back for a seventh year because of bad advice. And they were trying to make their case to the NCAA the whole time. That's why he got dragged out. But this one was open and shut because he looked for a medical hardship. That's where the waiver was coming from. And for a medical hardship, you will have had to play 30% or less of the games. 30% is the max amount of games you can play, even if you sustain a season-ending injury, to be able to get a medical hardship. He played 43.5% of the games. So he was over the line the entire time.
That's a lot more.
I don't mind them going out of their way to try to see if they could get him back on campus, see if they could get that medical hardship waiver. But in the end of the day, this was never actually going to happen. Now, if you would have had him on this team, you feel a lot better about where you're at, especially defensively. He was the guy last year, especially in the out-of-conference, who tied everything together on the defensive end. And then on the offensive end, really good in the mid-range, tied things together that way, was a decent secondary ball handler. I really appreciated what Caleb Mills did, and when he got hurt, everything went very south, very fast. So, it would have been nice to have him on this team, but not having him on this team is what we expected in the first place. I like this one a little bit more because the NCAA, open and shut case, gave you an answer quickly, didn't have to wait around and get positive about it, like we did, I think, last year at times with DeAndre Williams. Because if I'm doing sort of a revert back or trying to think of where we were at last year at this time with DeAndre Williams, I think a lot of people were on the positive side of this thing, thinking that a seventh year was possible.
Are we waiver university?
Absolutely.
Is that a problem?
I don't think it's the best thing to be, you know? I don't think it's the greatest thing to be, to have to be up against the clock every single year and waiting on the NCAA's discretion. But it's usually about one player a year. We'll see if we can make it happen. Usually doesn't actually come through. So it is what it is. I think that there's certain things where you have a good enough player who wants to play another year at your university, who you have a good relationship with. Sometimes throwing that waiver out there is a sign of good faith. And I think going into the future, that's not the worst thing in the world. I think what it shows from Penny Hardaway and the staff is he's willing to fight for his guys, at the very least. I don't think it's that bad. I think it's bad in the fact that you're always working against the NCAA and you're trying to get the NCAA on your side and you're never going to actually do that. But I think it does show for future people that ever end up in this program under Penny Hardaway, he's willing to fight for them to try to get another year.
I agree with all what you just said. My whole thing is, it seems like it's always every year we're going for a waiver. Last year it was DeAndre Williams, number one. And then the second point I would make is that it's distracting. It is less so than DeAndre Williams. But it's also a caveat every friggin' year. And it was a caveat when Penny was in this interview a few weeks ago when he was talking about when I leave that may not be as good as it is now, that whole deal. And he brought up Caleb Mills in that conversation.
What we want going forward is limiting of distraction. I agree with you. These things
can
be distractions.
But it's an excuse every dang year. Last year would have been, but Caleb Mills. And it's like, bro, and John has made this point, and I've listened to it because I produced that show. I think he's 100% right. Stop talking about Caleb Mills.
Yes, these things.
I'm not saying you. I'm talking about
these things need to be less distracting, and they also, I think, in the end of the day, like, they can't be used as a crutch. Going, Caleb, we didn't get DeAndre, we didn't have the roster that we ultimately wanted. But I think this one's a little bit different. It's out of the way quickly. You have everybody on campus now working in the right direction. This year feels different. Now, we'll see if there's distractions along the way.
Right.
But I think as we look at it right now, no Caleb Mills because he gets denied the medical hardship. Arthur Kaluma commits to Texas. I think your roster's set. So what do we think of this roster is the next question.
Well,
DJ Haggerty.
We get through the David Jones drama of him going to the G League.
Sure.
And then you get to the Caleb Mills waiver. And so we've got – are we done?
I don't know. I can never tell you if we're actually done, Brad. No one can tell you if this is the last of the dominoes that's going to fall.
I hope it is.
I'm
ready to take.
Just to be honest with you, Brad, this roster on its surface, it's the best one in the AAC.
I agree with you.
You have better defensive prowess. You have, in my opinion, a pecking order that is pretty obvious. If you would have brought in Arthur Kaluma, it could have muddied those waters a tad bit.
I really
believe that because you have P.J. Haggerty, a 22-point-per-game scorer at the top. Tyrese Hunter is your off-ball guy, probably your two, who can shoot, who can play a little bit of defense. Colby Rogers is a knockdown three-point shooter. Dane Danger, Musa Cisse, Nick Jourdain, whoever you want to throw in there for the 4 and 5. Barack Okoji, that injury is going to be annoying to deal with, but that's only through the first part of the season. Tyreek Smith, really good energy guy. You're not dealing with a very heavy roster load. You're going to be relatively thin. If you have injuries, it could be concerning. But if you get lucky, don't have the injury bug, I still think this team is at the top of the AAC, very capable of making an NCAA tournament. But I think all of these things, you talk about the David Jones not coming back, Arthur Kaluma not committing to the University of Memphis and going to Texas, Caleb Mills missing out on his waiver, all of these things all amalgamate to me thinking Sure, the roster's fine, but it definitely limits their ceiling. Their ceiling is very limited this year. Not in the AAC. I think they can own the AAC, although we should probably press pause considering last year and what we thought about the AAC. But I think as they get into those NCAA tournament conversations, as they get their seeding in the NCAA tournament, and I know I'm putting the cart before the horse, I just think there is limited opportunity to really make waves once you get into a tournament setting.
I think you nailed that. I think they got enough talent to get into the tournament, and I think that's all you need to do.
That's really what people want to see. Get back into the tournament after last year's relatively disastrous season. Not even relatively. It was a disastrous season.
You can get in with that roster.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. So, Caleb Mills, waiver denied. David Jones, out. Arthur Kaluma, out. I don't know if there's anything else on the horizon, but it really is Memphis basketball for sports radio. Just, you know,
peek behind
the curtain here. Inside baseball, it is the gift that keeps on giving.
Well, and
I don't know if next week there's going to be comments on a podcast from somebody.
Who's the staff? So you got Faraji, Rick. Yeah. You've got Penny, and then you just hired Turner.
Andre Turner.
So Turner, is that your staff? I guess that's your staff.
I think for the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's always, there may be another hire along the way. I don't know. I really don't know, Brad. There's always something. I mean, week to week, there could be a podcast quote or a clip.
This is not how you run an organization.
There's worse run organizations out there. I'll say that. But there is some frustrating realities about the way this thing is run right now. It's just a lot of moving pieces at all times. I think this offseason, though, if he just sort of sits down, gets everybody pulling in the right direction, they're all on campus right now, gets the staff figured out, I think this could be a relatively drama-free rest of the offseason if they so choose to go that direction. Now, one thing we're still waiting on, Brad, this is where the drama could come in. Academic stuff with Malcolm Dandridge last year.
We have not talked about it a lot.
I don't know. I have no insider information on it. As much as people want me to have insider information
You're
on
not it, the informant.
I do not have it. That's the next thing that you would seemingly think would drop. But there could be something even between now and then.
Well, I was going to get comment from our new athletic director, Ed Scott. He's on vacation.
Yeah. You like him? I like him a lot.
I like the pick. Yeah, yeah. I honestly think he'll work well with this basketball program.
The one thing that really just jumps off the page for me, and I'm not even going to talk about his fundraising because he's got a good track record. He's been an AD, a deputy AD, an associate AD. Yep. He's held every different AD position in an athletic department
been an AD,
at this point.
Yeah.
But one thing I did appreciate about him, I think in this day and age of being an athletic director, you need to be a salesperson. You need to have some charisma. You need to have somebody up there who can sell your program to all of these big donors, even without talking to them directly. And I think that Ed Scott captures that. I think he's a guy who's always going to have that charisma and can sell this program, even more so than Laird Veach. I'm not hating on Laird Veach. Laird Veach got a job at Mizzou because of the ties there and how well he did at setting up all the stadium renovations and the NIL fund with FedEx here. Like, there's a reason he got that job at Mizzou. But one thing that was always missing with him was the outreach, the community outreach, the ability to really get everybody in the community riled up and rallied to support all of these programs, because he didn't really have that same charisma. Ed Scott has that. That's the first thing. That's like the biggest draw. After only seeing his opening presser, that's the biggest draw to this.
No, I think he could be better than Veach in terms of the fit, with the university. And he's done all the fundraising. He's been an AD. It seems like he would, because I saw there was a video that went around when he met with the basketball team.
Or he met with the football team.
It was in the weight room, I think.
Yep.
It was shortly after the press conference.
He had them ready to run through a wall.
Like, that was really good.
Yes.
Like, I don't see Laird Veach, and not that I'm not, this is not a shot at Laird, that moment would not have happened with Laird.
I just want to, some people will take this the wrong way, but you shouldn't, because I think this is a very well-run athletic department when you actually look at what has been done since this guy took over. But Danny White at Tennessee, for example, that is a guy who can really rally the people at Tennessee. He's got a lot of charisma. He will speak on a bunch of podcasts. He'll go out of his way to be out in the public eye and speak on the behalf of the Tennessee Athletic
National Champs.
And you know what has worked? That. that has worked in a big way. And on top of that, he made some good hires. Josh Heupel was a good hire.
Yep.
Tony Vitello, a great hire. They just won the College World Series. But I think that level of, you know, being a seller, being a salesperson, I think that helps with a lot in this day and age. You have to be a salesperson. You have to be a good talker, a slick talker even. But that charisma goes a long way, and I think Ed Scott has that. Now, let's get on to this real quick. Grizzlies. Grizzlies are going into Summer League. I don't have a full Summer League roster, to be fair. I think Zach Edey will play a little bit. I don't know if he'll play after the Salt Lake City version of Summer League. Because you have Salt Lake City July 8th, July 9th, July 10th, then July 12th, July 15th, July 17th, July 18th will be in Vegas. Now, they open, get this, against the Jazz. And the Jazz, I don't know if you've seen their Summer League roster. It's kind of ridiculous.
Is it?
It's awesome. Max Abesmith, you remember him.
Yeah.
Oral Roberts in Texas.
Yep.
Armando Bacot.
Whoa.
Darius Baisley. We know him. We're familiar with him. Isaiah Collier, one of their picks. Kyle Filipowski, one of their picks. Keontae George. Yep. Taylor Hendricks. Walker Kessler is going to be there. And then Kenneth Lofton Jr., we get to see if he can get a revenge game off. Kenneth Lofton Jr. versus Zach Edey. I hope we get to see that game one coming up July 8th. That would be a fun little battle to go test Zach Edey game one in the NBA.
I've not seen the Grizzlies. They have not released theirs, to my knowledge. I mean, you're probably going to see a lot of Scottie Pippen Jr. You're probably going to see a lot of Jake LaRavia.
Yes.
You're probably going to see a couple of games with a Zach Edey. Gigi?
Yeah.
I would think. And Gigi will probably be in the mix.
Maybe.
There. I mean,
it's possible.
If Gigi's playing.
It depends what they think about his role going into next year.
I'm looking at last year's roster for us. Vince Williams
isn't touching.
He's not going to see any of the court this summer,
he's
though.
Not,
last summer, he did.
He's not going to be on that team.
And, of course, we will be missing David Roddy as we shipped him off to Phoenix. So, you know.
And then don't forget about DJ Jeffries
got on the roster.
Yes.
I'm excited about DJ. I know the guys in the midday show were like, DJ, but. And then the second rounders.
So what we're looking at really is DJ Jeffries will be a guy who will get some time with the summer.
Yeah.
I don't give him much of an opportunity to do much. He's older.
Everybody's down on DJ.
Well, but what in the hell type of role would he play with the Memphis Grizzlies? What would he do with the Memphis Grizzlies? Be honest. With the two ways they have right now, are they clear? They're not clearing a two-way.
Oh, he's not going to be on the roster.
That's what I'm trying to say.
I think that DJ is a...
He can make a good impression for other teams to bring him in.
Get a G League contract.
But he'll probably be... I mean, it looks like Gigi Jackson, Trey Jemison, Scottie Pippen Jr., Edey, Spencer, Wells is really all we sort of know, and then they'll fill in the cracks with a bunch of different guys that probably came out this year.
Yeah, I mean,
a bunch of G League guys.
I'm excited about Wells. He looks good. Edey, you know, I think you want to be careful with him because, you know, you don't want to break your first rounder in the two or three games.
Yeah, and obviously knock on wood, but he's held up really well. I think to get him some level of experience this summer is probably important. But one thing that you will do in summer league that you won't be doing during the year is probably focusing on him, giving him more of a focus on the offensive end like he did at Purdue, and you don't need to do that. You don't need to give him that type of leeway necessarily because that's not what he's going to be doing.
Ulrich,
when he gets with the
6'10 kid from Cameroon, I'm assuming he'll be on the roster.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're guessing now. Now we're flailing around.
I'm
shooting darts.
Trying to figure it out. But Zach Edey, I think ultimately, when you just look at this pick, I saw DeMichael Cole did a write-up as well about it and talked to a former coach at Purdue about Zach Edey. And the thing that just jumps off the page for me, I mean, is outside of the actual... what he brings to the Grizzlies on the floor is just the work ethic. Off season, what he adds to his bag, how much he's changed his body. He's only been playing basketball for like 6-7 years. He wasn't thought highly of in high school. Couldn't get an offer from Rick Barnes. Started his career at Purdue as an 8.4 rebound guy. Ended his career as a 25-12 guy. Mm. And won 2 Naismith Players of the Year. I just think that's the thing that you can't measure necessarily. But that gives me hope for what Zach Edey can be with this Grizzlies team and why I think ultimately a lot of people are talking themselves into that pick at number 9.
Yeah, the kid from Cameroon's going to Toronto, so I messed that up. But I'm excited about what's going to happen in the summer league, probably just about Edie, right?
Yeah.
That's the most excitement. That one player, if we saw three games from Zach Edie, Gabe, if you saw three games and they lost all the games and yet Edie looked right, you'd probably be happy.
Sure, and really, I mean, let's be honest. There's some givens about his game that we just know we're going to be there.
Right.
He will, if he plays 20 minutes a game, 18 to 20 minutes a game, he'll get 12 rebounds.
Right. No,
right?
He should.
And he will set screen. He can set a screen on the
get
sun.
Fouled.
He can set a screen on the damn sun.
No, set it out in the center court.
Right? Like, he can set screens. Yeah. Those are the two givens that I'm not worried about. What I want to see, even in summer league, is, okay, defensively, how can you get involved? What can you do if you get switched out on the perimeter? Like, how are you going to conduct yourself in those situations? Because those are the biggest issues we have. Those are the biggest concerns we have with Zach Edey. And also, I mean, keeping the fouls down, that type of thing.
It would be nice also if we find a shooter in the summer league too, you know?
Yeah. Somebody that
depending
can help
on what
now,
happens.
But we'll see what happens with Luke Kennard. I think there's still a pretty big shot that the Grizzlies can go get him.
It sounds
at a lower per year valuation.
Right.
That's something we're waiting on. I also think coming out of summer league, the rest of the offseason, the consolidation part of this thing is going to be important.
Right,
what are you doing
right.
with Zaire? Is John Conchar, Santi Aldama, what are you going to do with those guys?
Right.
And when you do that, is there going to be a free agent or a trade target as another big to back up Zach Edey that you go after? Because I think that's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in the end of the day, I've heard them tied to Daniel Tice.
Right, I heard that too.
Who's played for the Celtics and the Rockets. Can stretch out to the three-point line a little bit. I kind of like him. I really do like him. No matter who they sign in that spot as a backup big, that's going to be, what, their fourth or fifth big?
Yeah.
In the end of the day, you have Jaren, Brandon Clark, Santi right now, and Zach Edey. That'll be their fourth or fifth big.
On that subject, I do have breaking news.
Okay.
Very much related to this conversation. From Adrian Wojnarowski, free agent Xavier Tillman has agreed on his deal to return.
There we go.
He is returning to the Boston Celtics. There was some talk as a free agent that, you know, they might be in the mix to get him back.
Yes. And it would have made sense.
It really
would have.
I mean, it's a two-year deal for him, and good for Tillman, but... You know, I would have liked it, actually, I mean, if he had a shot, but Celtics are going all in, and they're getting him back.
The one reason Tillman, a potential reunion, would have made sense, too, is because you have Zach Edey, this big lumbering 7'4", 300 pounds.
Right.
Now you want to get a backup guy who could potentially switch, be more movable if Zach Edey gets played off the floor.
Right. Right.
You need to have somebody who can still rebound and do some of that dirty work and set screens, but they need to be able to play better defense.
And it's not going to be just Brandon Clark, a pogo stick five, because he's coming off an injury. Like, you're going to need him playing the four probably a little bit, but at the five, you're not totally short up there. So that's why I brought up Tillman.
And then here's the other one that came off the board today, James Wiseman.
James Wiseman, two-year
deal with the Pacers. I know there were some people thinking get him to the Grizzlies, see if we can teach him some defense, because that's been his biggest issue getting into the league. It's the defensive IQ. Fouls maybe a little too much on that end, and he tries a little bit too much on the offensive end. He wants to be an offensive-type player, and that's not what his role is at this point after being in the league and not showing that much. But he ends up with the Pacers on a two-year deal. But I didn't really think that would have made a whole bunch of sense.
No, he's still trying to prove himself. Like, Tillman, say what you want, but first of all, he's going to get run because Porzingis is going to be out five to six.
We've seen him play playoff minutes.
He's played
really good playoff minutes.
He's going to get half of the season. You'll be seeing Tillman playing for the Celtics with that Porzingis injury and some of these dudes. And then he got an old dude with Horford on that roster.
Game three, I think, of the NBA Finals.
Yeah,
Xavier Tillman.
Well, you saw it
thrown in there.
Yeah, and he was serviceable.
Knocked down a three.
Yep.
Got his rebounds. Did his thing.
Yep.
And then we also saw, let's not forget, 2 years ago or 3 years ago, really at this point, the series he had against the Minnesota Timberwolves.
It is good. Yeah.
He had to play.
Yes.
He was forced in there because Steven Adams couldn't. The knockouts to the three-point line to go get rebounds.
Yep.
He was a massive helper in playoff situations. You can say what you want. He probably won't get a whole bunch of minutes with the Celtics going forward.
Probably in the first half he will.
But that's the one thing you can trust with him, is even when he gets those minutes, even if he's been sitting on the bench cold for four games in a row with DNPs, you can throw him in there and trust him.
The Grizzlies are so screwed if Edie's not good, though. I mean, that's what it boils down to.
They're
totally screwed.
I just don't see that being an overly realistic proposition, because I think what they need from him, he can do. automatically.
Yeah.
Like is there
no,
any,
I think you're right.
Is there any doubt? There's a bunch of check boxes, check marks
yep.
that you need. But two, probably the two biggest ones, screen setting and rebound.
Right.
Is there any doubt in anyone's mind, to be honest, like in offensive rebounding,
he can
too,
do that.
Is there any doubt that even if he doesn't score points, even if the defense lacks, is there any doubt that he can that he can do that? I don't think there is. I don't think there should be.
I don't think there is. I'm with you on that. But yeah. I just pray he's good.
Yeah, for sure. Now, on that note, we're going to switch gears very hard because Copa America is going along right now. And,
did you say Copa?
Oh, Copa Cabana. There you go. Okay.
I figured I would spice up your Copa America discussion Barry.
Copa America is going along right now. And the United States men's national team? They've been knocked out because Uruguay beat them. They couldn't score a goal in the second half. So there is that. And this was supposed to be the golden age.
Yes.
The golden generation of men's soccer in the United States. So I want to talk about this with Lawrence Dockery. For those that don't listen to soccer, he'll make this very easy for you. He does a really good job. He's from the 901 Soccer podcast for Bluff City Media. And we're going to talk to him next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. So we have Copa America going along right now. The U.S. men's national team is kicked out of that. And we have the Euros. So I thought it was a good time to talk a little bit of soccer on the show. So let's bring on Lawrence Dockery. He's a writer for World Soccer Talk. He's also a host of the 901 Soccer Pod with Bluff City Media. He's on X at LDoc93. Lawrence, what's happening, brother? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Appreciate you hopping on. Now, let's be honest here. I'm a big football guy. I'm a big meathead. So I'm not the biggest soccer guy in the world. But I need to ask you, Euros and Copa America, explain this to me. And then explain how big of a deal they are as compared to the World Cup, which is what we all focus on every 4 years.
Yeah, so essentially, like the best way to think about it, I think, would be to essentially think of the Euros and the Copa America as conference tournaments. They are, you know, obviously the World Cup is the biggest show in town, but the Euros and the Copa America are probably either 2A or 2B in terms of, you know, prestige and stature and that sort of thing. And the Euros being a quote-unquote conference tournament are just for the European teams. The Copa America is typically just for the South American teams. But they are playing it here in the United States, and the U.S. was, until last night, a guest team along with Mexico, Canada, Costa Rica, and Jamaica. And so, you know, think of, like, if the SEC tournament were to be played in Memphis. Like, that's probably the closest thing I could equate Copa America in the U.S. to. The difference there is that obviously Memphis would not be playing in the SEC tournament despite hosting it. It's also kind of interesting. The Copa America is the oldest international soccer tournament in the world. It was first played in 1916. On the 100th anniversary in 2016, they had it here in the U.S., and it's still the best-attended Copa America of all time and is on track to be passed by this one.
Now, we'll talk about USA and Copa America and their ouster last night, but how's the Euro tournament gone so far?
The Euros, it's been a lot of fun. One of the things that really helps the atmospheres of the game, I feel like, is that it's in Germany, which is both kind of centrally located in Europe and a place that a lot of people want to visit. I think on one of the broadcasts today, they mentioned that of all of the countries that border Germany, I think there's like 8 or 9, only one of them didn't qualify, so that's really helped. You know, obviously as the hosts and being Germany, you know, they're 4-time World Cup champions. They're, I think, 3-time European champions. They've advanced, up to the quarterfinals. There's been some drama. Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal, were 0-0 all the way to penalty kicks yesterday.
Yep.
Ronaldo missed a penalty in overtime.
Saw that.
And then stepped up and made one in the shootout and, you know, they were able to advance. England has played, like, they have just been absolutely awful to watch, but they keep finding ways to get things done. They were down 1-0 in their round of 16 game with like a minute left. They tied it up, and then they scored a minute into overtime to beat Slovenia 2-1. So there's been no shortage of drama. And then, you know, quarterfinals are starting here in the next couple of days, and that's when things are going to get really cranked up to 10 out of 10.
Now, when the Copa America, United States did not score a goal and they ended up losing to Uruguay last night, what did you think of the USA's chances coming into Copa America versus what actually happened? Did they match up ultimately?
So coming into the competition, you would have thought that based on the group, that they had a real good shot at getting out. Now, once you got out of the group, you were going to run into problems because you were going to have to play either Brazil, who is obviously Brazil. I feel like even if anybody knows nothing about soccer, right, you know Brazil is awesome at it, right? And then you would play either Brazil or you would have to play Colombia. And Colombia just beat you 5-1 in lead up to this tournament. So that was going to be a tall task. So you would have thought that they had the ability to get out of the group, and then it was going to be a problem once you did, because you're in a group with Uruguay, who is the second best team in South America as we speak. Then you have Panama, who you historically have dominated, and I guess we can touch on that in a brief moment. And then you had Bolivia, who is the worst team in South America. Bolivia has not won a competitive game away from home soil in 9 years. So you look at it and you think, okay, well, we can get out of the group, and then after the group is when reality is going to set in. Unfortunately, reality set in last Thursday in Atlanta when we lost to Panama. I was fortunate enough to be able to be there in the press box to cover that. That was my first trip to Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and holy mackerel, yes, pictures and video and verbal descriptions do not do that place justice.
Yes, now
it is.
What I keep hearing, you know, from the outside sort of looking in is like, this is supposed to be, from a talent perspective, the golden generation or era of soccer for the United States, especially for the men's national team. Like, what's gone wrong? Like, is it Greg Berhalter, their coach? Because I think that's where a lot of people seem to sort of throw their shade.
Yes. So coaching under Greg Berhalter is a huge problem and has been a huge problem since day one. The man was not qualified to be hired in the first place, but his brother was the third in charge at U.S. Soccer, so that's how he got that job, despite being fired from a team in the Swedish second division and then doing absolutely nothing of note in MLS with the Columbus Crew. You know, it's crazy because, you know, you like to think successful coaches with successful jobs, like the guy in Columbus before Greg Berhalter won MLS Cup and the two guys in Columbus since Greg Berhalter have won MLS Cup. Guess which one of those four guys didn't win the MLS Cup?
The guy we're talking about.
Yes. that's a big problem. On paper, this is the golden generation of American talent. We have never had players that are this skilled. We have never had players playing at so many high-level elite clubs in top leagues in Europe. It's never happened. It's never been like this.
Yeah,
but
no.
after a game against Panama and a game against Uruguay, it's really time to start asking, are these guys, A, as good as we've built them up to be, and B, do they care? Because that was one thing the U.S. was renowned for internationally, was what they didn't have in skill and technical ability, they made up for with work, weight, and heart and determination. I mean, that's a tale as old as time across every sport, I feel like. And, you know, there's a lot of debate, how would this group of U.S. players fare playing previous versions of the national team? And I think we've discovered that these guys don't have any heart. They don't have any will to win. The locker room is very soft, and that starts at the top with the coach. Let me just throw some Greg Berhalter stats at you here real quick, if I may.
Okay.
In his tenure, he's played 9 games against South American teams. He's won 2 of them. In his tenure, he's played 9 games against European teams. He's won 2 of them. He's played 13 true road games. The reason he's been able to pad his stats so well is that he plays crap teams on home soil. So in his 13 true road games, he's won 2 of them. Since he was rehired, because there was a bit of a kerfuffle after the last World Cup where he didn't play Gio Reyna, and Gio Reyna's parents, you know, retaliated, and it almost cost him his job. That we need not discuss that here. But since being reappointed last year, he's got 7 wins, 6 losses, and 1 draw. That is not really going to prime anybody's pump, so to speak, getting ready for the World Cup on home soil in 2 years.
Yeah. Now, you got into a little issue last week, too. I believe you were at the presser, and you asked Greg Berhalter if his job should be on the line. How did that all go? Definitely want to know about that.
Here's the deal. So I have, prior to last Thursday in Atlanta, I had covered 3 U.S. national team games. All 3 were in Nashville. 2 of them were when Greg Berhalter was the coach. And both those occasions, it was a World Cup qualifier against Canada in 2021 and a friendly last October against Ghana. And from even before he got hired, I was very critical of him, of the process that led to him and the decisions that he's made as coach. So I've been very critical. I've made no bones about that. Both of those occasions, I was by the head of communications for U.S. Soccer, looked me in the eyeball and waved me off and would not allow me to ask Greg Berhalter any questions post-game.
Wow.
So this game in Atlanta was not a U.S. Soccer-run event. It's run by CONMEBOL. That's the South American conference. So they don't. I'm just a name on a sheet of paper. They don't know anything about me. So they hand me the microphone, and I start to ask the question, hey, should you be coaching for your job? And the PR guy for U.S. Soccer ran up to the front of the room and was like waving his arms around, almost like, no, no, not him, not him. And if you can, you can go find the clip. I'm sure it went. I went viral for about 3 days. It was exhausting. But there's at the start of the clip, Greg Berhalter goes, "Wait a minute, what's going on? What do we want to happen here?" And then I finally get to ask the question, "Should his job be on the line?" And he just kind of stared at me for 5 or 6 seconds, and then said, "I don't really understand the question." And then he repeated my question perfectly right back to me, and then said, "That's not for me to decide."
Well, but then last night, I believe he was asked something similar, and he said he still thinks he's the guy for the job.
Yeah, that's I don't know that Greg Berhalter is going to give us a Penny Hardaway stop asking me blank questions type moment. He's traditionally been a very vanilla guy, and that's part of the problem is he has all the charisma of a lamppost. And you know, typically in a national team setting, you need a little bit of something. I need just a little bit of juice or sex appeal or whatever you want to call it. And he has none of those things.
Yes. Now, who ultimately would make the decision to get rid of him? President of U.S. Soccer's from Memphis, right?
Yeah, that would be – so Cindy Parlow-Cohn is the president of U.S. Soccer. She's from Memphis, the road that goes right through the middle of Micro's soccer complex out in Collierville. That's got her name on it. So it's probably going to be a collaboration of her and a guy named Matt Crocker, who came over from the Premier League club Southampton. I don't remember exactly what his official job title is, but – you know, they put out a very generic, very boring statement last night, like our performance fell below expectations and we will undertake a review, blah, 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 which is very similar to the one they put out after the World Cup when they decided that, you know, Greg doing what 5 other managers before him had done was good enough to bring him back. So I don't know if he'll keep his job. If I had to bet money on it, I bet that he does keep his job because that's just the way that U.S. Soccer operates. They love him. You could almost liken it to, you remember when every year everybody wanted Jason Garrett's job?
Yes.
When he was the coach of the Cowboys, and for whatever reason.
But he was such a yes man to the
yeah.
higher powers.
Yeah, it's just you every so often he'd sneak up there with like a 12-win season, and you knew how it was going to go in the playoffs. That's the Greg Berhalter tenure with the U.S. national team. You know, they'll beat a lot of bad teams, but every time they play somebody with a pulse, you know what's going to happen. And it doesn't really matter because the people that make the decisions just love him so much.
Yeah. Now, Copa America, you said it's here in the United States. Again, talking with Lawrence Dockery at LDoc93, 901 Soccer Podcast, also a writer for World Soccer Talk. With it being here, how have the crowds been, though? Like, how have the crowds been for – I saw that the game was in Arrowhead last night. I think it was USA versus Uruguay. How has that gone?
The crowds have been fantastic. There's been a little bit of consternation with some of the smaller crowds in NFL venues and how that's looked on TV compared to what the crowd looked like at the Euros. But all in all, and not even just counting the Copa America, but there were a bunch of like warm-up friendlies in the lead-up to Copa America. So from May 26th to July 14th, there will have been 44 international soccer games played in the U.S., across 19 cities and 15 different states. And so far, those games are averaging 49,598 people per game. Mm-hmm. The biggest of which, believe it or not, Mexico played Brazil in a friendly at Kyle Field in College Station, Texas, okay, and got like 85,000 people there for it. So the crowds have been really good. The U.S. has had pro at all three Copa America games. The U.S. has had very large, very pro-American crowds. As a matter of fact, dating all the way back to March, the U.S. has had seven straight games hit 40,000 people for the first time in the program's history. So the crowds here in the U.S. have been really, really, really good.
Now, once these two tournaments are over, soccer at the Olympics in Paris, is that all going to start up? Everybody get into camp, training camp, and for their collective countries?
Mm-hmm. The Olympics, I think, probably start maybe 2 weeks after. So the Olympic soccer starts before the opening ceremonies because it's a time-consuming event, so you can't really cram it into 2 weeks. So it starts a couple of days before the opening ceremonies. But the Olympics in Paris this year is going to be the first time that both U.S. men and U.S. women have qualified for the same Olympic Games since 2008 in Beijing, I believe. The slight difference is that the men at the Olympics, it's a U-23 competition. I know they've discussed doing that for basketball, and I don't think it's ever really gotten anywhere because, you know, the NBA guys bring a lot of eyeballs to that. But the U.S., the U-23 men's team, they get to play France, they get to play the hosts, but then they also have Guinea and New Zealand are the two countries that they have to really get past to get out of the group. And then on the women's side, they're in a group with Zambia, Germany, and Australia. They got a new coach, Emma Hayes, after, you know, they were a disaster at the Women's World Cup in Australia last year. Emma Hayes was very successful at the club level in England, so there's a lot of optimism that she might get them back to where they belong, because the U.S. women haven't won gold at the Olympics since 2012.
What should be the expectation for both sides, women's and men's?
I think the women need to get back to the gold medal game. Until, you know, every year from 96 to 2012, they've gone to the gold medal game every single time. I think they'd only not won gold once. And the last two times they have failed to even get to the gold medal game. I think the goal should be to at least get back there. And for the men, I think you got to at least get out of the group. That's a doable group. And then whatever happens in the knockout round happens.
Yep, and we'll see. We'll see if they don't get out of the group. Is it really going to be on? Is it Berhalter? He coaches there too, right?
No,
he doesn't. You said it's U-23.
Yeah, it's a separate team. It's a guy named Marko Mitrovic is the coach. He's been like an assistant at a number of places.
Okay. Gotcha. Now, let's get a little bit local here. How is Memphis 901 FC doing this year? And also, like, one thing that I just don't get about Memphis teams, and this happens in the NBA as well, why are they in the Western Conference? Like, why does that all – I don't get that. I don't understand. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because that's actually a very new development. Is last year in the USL, two teams in the Western Conference ceased operations, and in the Eastern Conference, they added two new teams. So, luck of the draw, Memphis and I think Tulsa got moved from the East to the West. Tulsa makes a little bit more sense since they're, you know, 7 hours farther west than we are. But I'm sure this is something that the Grizzlies fans have had to suffer with for many, many years, and now 901 FC gets to enjoy the same type of frustration. But they're doing well this year. They're playing very well right now. They had a little bit of a rough start to the season, but they kept the faith. They made a lot of good moves in the offseason, and they kept believing in what they were doing, and it's starting to really pay dividends. They've only lost once in their last 11 games. Their most recent game was this past Friday. They beat the defending league champions Phoenix Rising 5-1 down at AutoZone Park. They're in fourth place in the Western Conference. That's not necessarily the highest they've ever been, but the top eight teams in each conference make the playoffs. And right now, there's, I think, a total of 6 points separating second place from ninth place. So that's basically two games separating you from second place and being entirely out of the playoffs. So it's really tight, and they got a tough one on the road this week at Orange County, I believe.
Now, one of the big bits of news around 901 FC is Tim Howard stepping down. Do you have any explanation as to why that ultimately happened?
There was. I think the line was to pursue other opportunities. You know, he has spent a lot of time the last couple of seasons as a TV pundit for NBC's coverage of the Premier League. But, you know, from the sound of it, it sounds like it's just going to be business as usual over at 901SC. You know, Tim was the sporting director. That's essentially the GM of the team. And Caleb Patterson-Sewell is an assistant coach. He's the assistant sporting director. Sounds like he's going to step into that role for the remainder of the season. But from all accounts, it sounds like it's just going to be business as usual. There's not going to be too much of a shakeup. One of the media availabilities that we had, they said Tim allowed them a lot of latitude I think they said he used a hands-off approach. You know, he wasn't micromanaging or anything like that. So they've built a good roster, and if it's going to be business as usual, that should mean pretty good things going forward.
Last thing for Lawrence Dockery at LDoc93. He has the 901 Soccer podcast for Bluff City Media. One of the most underrated teams, programs in the city, the University of Memphis women's soccer team. They're phenomenal, and they seem to be phenomenal every year, top 25 caliber every single year. They released their schedule last week. What are their biggest games on there, and how do you think they'll fare?
Yeah, they loaded up on the schedule this year. Coach Brooks Monaghan not playing around over there. I think part of the reason they loaded up is, like, they've been to six straight NCAA tournaments in 7 of the last 8 years. They've got back-to-back Sweet 16 trips. They've got 3 straight conference titles. Last year, going into the NCAA tournament, they were 18-1 and got a 6th seed. They got majorly screwed.
It was nuts.
And the only loss was on the road at a ranked Alabama team who had gone to the College Cup semifinals, that's the Final Four, the year before. Somehow they were a 6th seed. So this year they've loaded up. They've got 5 SEC teams on the schedule. They get Vandy at home. They're at Auburn, at Ole Miss, at Missouri, and at Tennessee. And then they get 2 Big 12 teams at home. They get Iowa State and Kansas State, both at home. So Brooks Monaghan's not playing around. Would also be remiss if I didn't also mention that the men's team over at the University of Memphis released their schedule. Coach Richard Mulrooney has actually taken them to consecutive NCAA tournament appearances for the first time in program history. They won their first ever NCAA tournament game last year. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like they have any of the proverbial Power Four teams on the schedule, but they do have 6 straight home games between August 13th and September 1st.
Yep, for sure. Well, Lawrence, I appreciate you coming on, shedding a little light on soccer. Don't get to do this very often, but we can do it again in the future.
Well, let's hope so. I look forward to it.
Yes, sir. But that is Lawrence. That
really
is
good.
Lawrence Dockery. He is a writer for World Soccer Talk, also hosts the 901 Soccer Pod with Bluff City Media.
That was extensive. That was well done, Lawrence.
Not a fan of Greg Bierhalter.
No one is, though.
Yeah. No one is, though.
I like how he got in there, though, on the non-sanctioned event that he slipped the question in. That was well done.
Yeah, for sure.
They weren't expecting that.
Yeah. But appreciate Lawrence hopping on and shedding a little light on soccer that we don't get to talk very often.
No, it's that time of the year with the Olympics.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But let's go ahead and transition into hour number 2, and starting it would be Jeff Calkins. He's next right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2 times points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.